morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 17, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Lawyers for Tanzania's detained opposition leader petitions the United Nations.
His arrest violated his legal and human rights. That's why he has filed this to the UN, because he is sure that the UN can ask the government of Tanzania to respect the human rights, to respect the international treaties they have signed.
Somalia's president suspends his prime minister. UNICEF says at least 1 million Nigerian children could miss school this year. And a UN commission says human rights abuses in Burundi have not stopped.
What is important to notice here is that there is political violence, there is discrimination of DNL, and even President Ndayishimiye doesn't want to hear speaking about opposition.
And an application to the ECOWAS Court of Justice on behalf of Sierra Leonean women. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Lawyers for Tanzania's jailed opposition leader, Frema Mbowe, have petitioned the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention on his behalf. Mbowe and other Chadema Party leaders were arrested in July this year while preparing to hold a conference to demand constitutional reforms. The government accused him of financing terrorism. John Nrema, Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols, explains the reasons for the petition.
It is true that Mr. Mbowe has filed a petition on the UN Working Group on his arbitrary detention, because his arrest violated his legal and human rights, because they arrested him at the midnight in Mwanza, almost 1,000 kilometers. They transported him from Mwanza to Dar es Salaam without even telling him where are they taking him, why are they arrested him, and for what reasons. That's why he has filed this to the UN, because he is sure that the UN can ask the government of Tanzania to respect the human rights, to respect the international treaties they have signed.
Mr. Mbowe was arrested since July this year and charged with conspiracy and provision of funds to commit terrorist acts. What is the arbitrariness in this?
According to our laws, if you are to be arrested by the police, they have to tell you why are they arresting you, and they have to take a caution statement from you. But for the case of Mr. Mbowe, they didn't even take him a caution of statement, while our laws say that you have to give a statement within 4 hours after arrest. Mr. Mbowe was arrested around midnight and he was transported for almost 9 hours from Mwanza to Dar es Salaam, and he was put on Oyster Bay Central Police for 3 days without even the family to be notified. So that's the nature of his arbitrariness.
So what would you like for the UN group to do in this case? Can they order the Tanzanian courts to release Mr. Mbowe and the other co-defendants pending trial?
We need order to release Mr. Mbowe. Although in Tanzania, the nature of the charges have been arrested with, the terrorism charges and economic sabotage. We don't have a bail for that according to our laws, something which violates the international laws. That's why he decided also to file it in the UN, so that the UN can ask the government of Tanzania to do the same. And also, in Tanzania, they filed the same case, although with different legal grounds, at the High Court of Tanzania, that he has to be given a bail because he was arrested unlawfully.
When is the trial of Mr. Mbowe and his co-defendants or co-accused? Can you get them bail before the trial?
According to our laws, the bail is not allowed in the nature of his cases, that he has to be there. Even if it will take 10, 15 years, he has to be in prison. If you are charged with economic sabotage and terrorism, you cannot get a bail from the court unless the case is winded up. So we don't know when the case will be ending up, but also we need him to be released. He can get a bail and the UN can ask the government of Tanzania, and if the government of Tanzania refuse to do that, UN can do some sanctions.
You said the other day that you have been able to visit with Mr. Mbowe. What is his condition, and what is the condition of the other co-accused?
Let me tell you today that Mr. Mbowe, he is under the condemned prison. Condemned prison in Tanzania is that he is with people who have been charged with, who have already been sentenced to life prison or a death penalty. That is where Mr. Mbowe is. So he's with people who have been already condemned for life prison or life sentence. They are waiting to be hanged. So that's the position where Mr. Mbowe is in Ukonga prison. The other co-accused, they are in the same situation, but all the time they are tied up their hands because these people have been tortured severely. And even yesterday in the court, they have told the judge that they've been tortured. So the reason behind why Mr. Mbowe has decided to go to the UN is that he needs justice for him and for the other co-accused so that they can come out and continue with the democratic movement in our country. Today, Mr. Mbowe was in the court in Dar es Salaam, and the police denied the access of Chadema leaders, Mr. Mbowe's family, and the public at large from 10 a.m. to 13 a.m. until the judge intervened and asked the police that these people, they should be allowed to get in the court because this is an open court and they should go in with their mobile phones because the police didn't want anybody to go with their mobile phones because today was the day of the police officer, the regional police officer, and the one who arrested them. He was doing his statement and giving out his witnesses to the court. He started yesterday. And after that, he was being cross-examined yesterday until he asked for time to go out and pee. The police were saying that that was an embarrassment, why the people who were within the court decided to write it out with their mobile phones. And they decided that today nobody should get in with a mobile phone. But so that's what is happening in Tanzania. Thank you very much, James Butler.
Thank you so much, sir. John Ridman is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party. He was speaking with us from Dar es Salaam. The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi says crimes including arbitrary detention, execution, torture and intimidation have not stopped despite a pledge by President Evariste Ndayishimiye to address the situation. In its latest report, the commission says the political climate in Burundi today is highly intolerant. Agathon Rwasa is leader of Burundi's main opposition National Congress for Liberty, the CNL party.
I think the commission report is to be appreciated by everyone. This is the president of the Republic of Burundi himself has assumed that things are going in the wrong direction. I mean, what he said when he was deploring the fact that there was no justice delivered in Burundi. And you know, where lacks justice, it means that abuses prevail. So I think the commission is right to say that Burundi is still a case to be monitored closely.
Especially the report makes reference to the fact that political violence is continuing even after the election.
Yes, that's quite true. You know, there is, for instance, just an example. The Human Rights League Iteka, which is a league from Burundi, has reported many cases of people who have disappeared since Ndayishimiye is in office. And many times, the people who are arrested and who disappear are arrested by people from the intelligence or the police, or some other times the coordination by the police and the intelligence, and even the National Army is involved. There are many, many examples that one can just mention. But what is important to notice here is that really there is political violence, there is discrimination of CNL, and even President Ndayishimiye doesn't want to hear speaking about opposition. For him, democracy means something else. It means his party only and no one else. And one can assume that, after all, what he has been saying is trying to implement it. Just imagine that nobody from CNL, for instance, is appointed here or there. Article 140 of the Constitution specifies that there must be respect of equilibrium from the political side, from the regional side, and so forth. So when he fails to respect what the Constitution says, this is to mean that, after all, there is many, many abuses on the basis of political delivery.
You know, I've spoken with a government spokesperson, and each time a report like this or the journalists complain, the government would tell me that those people who are writing reports such as this are trying to tarnish the image of the government of Burundi at a time that the government has had election and it wants to now bring every Burundian on board.
I think that is just a matter of the government to try to pretend that he's what he's doing. After all, who is responsible of the security of the citizens? Number one is the government, and it has been given the instrument and human resources to guarantee that. Unfortunately, it is using these human resources and other means that are provided to the government and its institutions to maintain that situation of uncertainty, where the opposition lacks freedom, where media are likely narrowed in terms of freedom. So for a spokesperson of government, he couldn't say nothing else but that, because he has just to defend himself and to defend his position. Otherwise, the victims of this situation may support that the report is quite right.
Mr. Raza, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much for taking our call.
Welcome. Thank you too.
Agathon Raza is the leader of Burundi's main opposition National Congress for Liberty Party. He was speaking with us from the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. Somalia's President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, also known as Farmajo, has suspended Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble in the latest power struggle between the two leaders. Mohamed Kahia reports from Mogadishu.
In taking action Thursday, Farmajo accused the Prime Minister of making rash decisions and not having good working relations with the President's office. Citing Articles 87 and 90 of Somalia's provisional constitution, Farmajo said Roble, who also served as chief minister, violated the constitution. There has been no immediate comment from Roble. The decree from the president's office further halted Roble's power of hiring and firing, pending the completion of the country's ongoing election process. Long-delayed presidential elections are set for November. The men are also at odds over the firing of former National Intelligence and Security Agency Director Fahad Yassin. He was dismissed in connection with the investigation into the disappearance of female spy Ekran Talil Farah back in June. Nisa said Farah was abducted and killed by armed Guba Shabab, but in a new twist, the militants strongly denied the involvement. According to the constitutional experts, the ongoing power struggle between the two men is also sparked by the way their roles are designated in the constitution. UN Deputy Secretary General Amina Mohamed Mandi visited Mogadishu and appealed to both men to put their differences aside so they can focus on already delayed polls. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, September 17. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, in Nigeria says at least 1 million Nigerian children could miss school this year because of insecurity. Nigerian schools in the north of the country have been targeted by armed groups in a series of mass kidnappings for ransom. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
UNICEF Nigeria said Wednesday the country had recorded 20 school attacks this year alone, and 1,436 students so far have been abducted. The report also showed that 16 students have been killed, while 200 remain missing. The children's agency blamed the attacks for the low turnout at schools as they resumed classes this week. An estimated 1 million children could miss out on education this year as a result of the fear of kidnappings. In the UNICEF report, country representative Peter Hawkins urged Nigerian authorities to prioritize security at schools, stating it was unacceptable for communities to be worried to send their children to school over fears they will be abducted. Hawkins was not immediately available for an interview, but Emmanuel Huande, spokesperson at Nigerian Union of Teachers, says the government must take responsibility.
We want the government to take action that will see that the security agencies respond promptly to incidents of kidnapping, incidents of adoption, where we'll see them actively involved, actively engaging such criminal elements.
Ransom-seeking criminal gangs began targeting schools in northern Nigeria late last year. Amnesty International says hundreds of schools there have been closed as a result. As schools across the country began opening this week for Renewster, more than 37 million students are due back at schools. But officials reported low attendance in attack-prone areas like north-central Kaduna State. In the capital, authorities pushed back the resumption date to September 19 without giving a reason. Abuja resident Florence Ulo is scared about sending her 5-year-old son back to school.
Even me that is in the city, and of course my son's school is not far from the house and they have security, but I still don't feel comfortable. Thought of that they can go into a school and adopt children is very scary for a parent.
Last year, the coronavirus pandemic set back school calendars and disrupted learning for millions of students in Nigeria. UNICEF's Hawkins says the situation has worsened, quote, with the additional challenge of school closures due to prevailing insecurity across the country, end quote. He said that while countries worldwide, including Nigeria, were taking some actions to provide remote learning, many students are not being reached. He said UNICEF joined a global digital freeze of social media Thursday to protest the inability of children around the world to access classrooms, and that unless mitigation measures are implemented, the World Bank estimates a loss of $10 trillion in earnings over time for the present generation of students globally. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Women's economic justice lawyers in Africa have filed a case application before the ECOWAS Court of Justice on behalf of women in rural Sierra Leone who say they have been adversely affected by mining and extraction activities in Kwedu. While a legal case is pending nationally in Sierra Leone to seek damages for negative impacts of mining in the Kwedu case, the regional court application specifically hopes to address the way women are ignored at higher levels of justice. Lesogo Unchonga, a lawyer from the Initiative for Strategic Litigation in Africa, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the case.
So the community has seen a fit to bring a matter before the ECOWAS court against the Leone, and generally leveling against the government the violations that the government exposed the community to. You know, in gender-neutral laws, gender-neutral holdings by court, in decisions that are made, you know, there's no, women are not represented in the spaces where decisions, like the fact that particularly rural women in Africa are the ones who have possession of the land, who have use of the land for farming activities, related activities. Our intervention and our intended recommendations to the court are around the surfacing of gendered compensation. And in that, we are asking the court to take a gender perspective on the claims of compensation, as well as the loss of the livelihoods and suitability of alternative land for the women in the community, looking at the fact that we're taking it, you know, quite disproportionate by the extractives.
Do you think it's possible the economic models, the way they are in many places, not just West Africa, but they undervalue women's knowledge, women's work? And is there a case to be made at the legal level at ECOWAS? And I know a lot of, because I know a lot of groups, at least local groups in West Africa, work on these kind of valorizing the fact that women's knowledge and women's work is underpaid, and therefore they often have less power when it comes to the quote-unquote formal justice system. Do you think this case could bring that subject, you know, more attention, make progress on that subject?
Definitely. I mean, one of the things that we intend to raise to the court is the fact that because work is generally undervalued or unvalued completely, it's possible for women to be included because they cannot in the spaces where decisions are made. You know, we are not a country and a system, I mean, across the region, where patriarchy reigns and is rife. And so it's easier to become a chief in the region, ones with whom, you know, agreements by the mining companies are made.
How do you think this could have an effect, because it is a regional court, on other similar instances? Because obviously in Koidu, it's not the only rural community where women are the most severely impacted by the extractive industry, as you mentioned.
We definitely hope that the case itself will have a broader, a wider impact than just the Koidu community. And that's Isla's theory of change, is the possibility of the impact that the case could have. We've got other cases that we're working on in different other countries. We've got at national level in the Ugandan jurisdiction, where we are also amicus in also industry. And our hope is that decisions made by regional mechanisms at that level would impact the decisions that are made at national level, would impact the decisions that are made, you know, at the level, because people would then know that this is the position that the regional courts hold.
That was Lesogo Unchonga, a lawyer from the Initiative for Strategic Litigation in Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Botswana. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the latest FIFA rankings. Senegal remains the best ranked African country at position number 20 and first in Africa, up from number 21. They're closely followed by Tunisia, who occupies the second spot in Africa, three places up, and they are now at number 25 in the world. African champions Algeria remains unchanged at number 3 and 30th in the world, while Morocco is down one spot to 33 and occupy the fourth position. To round up the top five in Africa is Nigeria, who occupies the fifth position and number 34 in the world. Meanwhile, the top 10 countries in the world are Belgium, Brazil, England, France, Italy, Argentina, Portugal, Spain, Mexico, and Denmark in that order. Staying with football news, FIFA President Gianni Infantino has renewed the World Soccer ruling body's commitment to support the development of football in Nigeria. He also pledged to strengthen FIFA's partnership with the Nigerian Football Federation. He was speaking when he paid a courtesy visit to President Muhammadu Buhari in Abuja. The FIFA president is in Nigeria for the Six Nation Aisha Buhari Invitational Football Tournament for Women, which is named in honor of the wife of the Nigeria's president.
Nigeria is there to lead Africa, but to lead the world. So help us, dear president, to pass our message to those who maybe don't want change, who don't want unity, that football is about bringing people together.
And now to volleyball news. Kenya women's national volleyball team, the Malkia Strikers, strolled to a 3-0 win over Burundi in the ongoing African Nations Championships at the Kigali Arena in Rwanda. With the result, Kenya finished second in Pool B with 9 points behind group leaders and reigning champions Cameroon, who emerged top and unbeaten with 12 points from 4 matches. Kenya will now play Pool A leaders and host Rwanda on Saturday in one of the semifinals. In the meantime, the Confederation of African Volleyball has suspended the game between Rwanda and Senegal at the ongoing Women's African Nations Volleyball Championship in Kigali. The game was due to be played on Thursday evening. The game, which was due for Thursday evening, was Rwanda's final game in Group A. It will determine whether the team tops its group as it heads into the semifinals, for which it has already qualified thanks to victories against Morocco and Nigeria. Meanwhile, Nigeria's national volleyball women's team will battle Morocco on Friday in their last match of the Women's Pool A of the championship. In cricket news, the 2021 ICC Women's T20 World Cup Africa qualifier holding in Botswana is in the semi-finals. In the first semi-final, Uganda women will take on the table toppers of Group A, Zimbabwe, while Namibia will take on Tanzania in the second semi-final on Friday. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, September 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butting in Washington, saying have a lovely weekend.